Oh, thank you very much. Thanks, Rob. Live tweets feeds really absolutely terrify me because I just have this vision of me sort of giving it my all up here and people just going, God, this is shit. Where to start? Yeah, so my name is Rob Archer. I'm formerly a really bad management consultant, now a psychologist. And this is my colleague, Kirsty Tift, who is also in the city and escaped and is now also a psychologist. And we run a company called The Career Psychologist. I say a company, there's three of us. But we specialise really in one thing, which is this thing about career paralysis. So yeah, career paralysis. It's the idea of being in a job which either you hate or, you know, is you're pretty sure that there's something else out there, if only you knew what that was. And people get trapped between a kind of unwanted present and an uncertain future, basically. And this idea, career paralysis, is something that I was in for about 10 years. So just to test the waters, stand up if you feel that you are in some form of career paralysis yourself. Thank God for that. Okay, no, don't sit down, stay standing if you've been in what we're going to call career paralysis for longer than 6 months. Okay. For longer than 1 year. Okay. 2 years. Okay. What should we go to? 3? 5? Shit. 10? There was some worrying.
Thank God I'm
Yeah, well, at least you're in the right place.
Yes,
at least.
Finally.
How long do you think you've been in career paralysis then?
Since I started work.
Okay,
seriously,
okay.
Yeah. I've changed careers a couple of times, but...
Right, but never found the thing.
No.
Okay, all right. I'm glad you all stood up at the beginning, because, you know, that is what this talk is about. I think probably my own background is relevant to this. So I grew up in a place called Birkenhead. Has anybody heard of Birkenhead? It's a bit like, as you can see, it's close to Liverpool. It's a bit like Liverpool's unwashed armpit. It's got almost nothing going for it. When I was growing up in the 80s, essentially unemployment was the big story. I grew up on an estate where 50% of adults were unemployed. And so growing up, what I was really conscious of is fear of unemployment. And I think that informed a lot of my early choices. So when I was looking for my first job, basically I was looking for security above anything else. I want good money and I want security. And so off I went and I became a management consultant. And lo and behold, that was good money and it was good security. And you know, on many levels it was great. Apart from the level that from day one I hated it. I felt completely out of like a fish out of water. There were people in meetings seemingly passionate about things that I literally couldn't give a toss about from day one. And I just thought, I must have missed some lesson here because I don't understand what's going on. Now, I had two sort of allies that were also a problem in that I was reasonably intelligent. Hands up if you're reasonably intelligent. Come on, don't be modest. Okay, good for you. And I was also pretty conscientious. Who's conscientious here? Okay, well, good. If you just put your hand up twice, that's very good, because those are the two best predictors of success in the workplace. Good for you. But they are also the classic recipe to get stuck, because they both mean in combination. If you fall into a job that is not right for you, because you're bright, you'll be quite good at it. So you'll be good at a lot of things if you're bright. And secondly, if you're conscientious, you'll keep trying harder at it. And you'll try and you'll try and you'll try and you'll keep going. And I kept going at a job that I hated for 12 years. 12 years that I will never get back. I'll never be able to look back on with much fondness. And all I think now is, why didn't I leave earlier? I wish I was less conscientious. But I'm not. So IQ and conscientiousness, good and bad. At this stage, I want to ask you, so you're in career paralysis. I'd like you now to pair up, I think. And if you can, pair up with somebody you don't know. Hopefully you don't know quite a few people here. But pair up, and when you pair up, know that you are going to be coaching each other tonight, okay? So pair up, introduce yourselves, and maybe just explain what you're doing here, why you're stuck, why you at a talk called Career Paralysis. Over to you. Okay, so what kind of, just shout out some reasons why you think you're stuck. Just shout out, don't be shy.
Money and incentives.
Yes.
Doing what you think you should be doing, testing your skills. Like.
Oh, doing what you think you should be doing. Yeah, okay, yeah, great. Why else?
Not being good enough to the wrong company.
Yes. What else was that?
Don't know what I want to do.
Don't know what I want to do, classic, yes, okay. Tell me if this pattern resonates with you. Okay. This is why I think people get stuck, basically based on my experience. So this is the experience of being in career paralysis or head stuck. In my experience, it's a kind of circular thing. The first thing that happens is you don't like your job particularly. So you start thinking of alternatives, don't you? And you think to yourself, oh, I should have been a doctor. Course. And your mind gets very excited. Yes, of course. I should have been a doctor. I want to help people. What can be better than that? And then your mind says, are you joking? The first demon arrives and says, what the hell are you talking about? It's 7 years retraining. And you got a B in your GCSE biology. What planet are you on? So you discount it, okay? And the next thing comes along and you say, well, I of course that's not right, because what I really need to do is start my own business. Of course, just like Rob has. And it looks so easy. Thank goodness, so I'm going to start my own business. And then your mind says, are you joking? Do you not know about 2008? Do you not know about the huge fiscal crunch that we're in? Nobody's got any money and you want to start a business? You've got to be joking, mate. So you discount. Then you join Escape the City and you get one of their emails and you see, oh, of course, dolphin trainer in the Indian Ocean. And you say, yes, of course, this is what I've meant to be doing in my life. And then your mind says, you idiot. What the hell are you doing? You should be getting onto the career the property ladder in London. You should be thinking about your future, mortgage, babies, the lot. So you discount that. And then you get back to your current job and you say, oh, well, maybe it's not quite so bad after all. And then you go in the next day and you realise, no, it's still shit. And then you end up back where you were and you've just had a whole loop. And then, of course, it's about 6 months later. So this time, the stakes are even higher. So there's even more demons. And what happens is people go round and round in circles and they get imprisoned by their own demons. Does that ring a bell?
Yes.
If so, I want to say two words to you. Well done. And when I say that, that is not a joke. Well, I'll let you know, when I need a laugh from you. I mean that really sincerely, because I mean, well done for coming here tonight. Because here's what I bet happened. You signed up for this event. You thought, yes, that sounds just like me. It's exactly what I need. And then the day came and you thought, can I really be asked? Can I be bothered traipsing across London in the rain to come and listen to some idiots talk about career paralysis? Can I really be bothered? Did anybody not think that? So, if that's you and you're here anyway, well done. And I want you to think of that as the template for how to get unstuck. Because what you did today is you took a step forward. It's a small step, and we're not going to solve everything tonight, I'm afraid. But it was a step forward made in the presence of a thought that said, can I really be bothered? And in that is the key to getting unstuck. All you've got to do tonight is work out tomorrow what the next step forward is. And that will come with its own demons as well. Does that make sense? So anyway, long story short, I became a psychologist and I had to retrain for about 6 years, and it was a bloody nightmare. But I'm glad I did it, because I think that psychology is important, especially for this kind of work. I think it's important for two reasons. Firstly, it's about the science of human behaviour. Why do we do what we do? And I find that interesting, and I also think it's very relevant for career change. But secondly, and Rob talked about this, when I was a management consultant, I got paid to go into workplaces and basically just make things up off the top of my head and try and sound important, try and come up with some jargon so that they would pay me fees. And I didn't like that. I think the reason that psychology appeals to me is because I wanted something that had some, I could become an expert in, and there was some evidence there. And I think evidence is important if you're in your situation. If you go down to Waterstones and look at career change section, you know, there's thousands of books. Everybody has a view on what you should do. And I think it can be overwhelming. Do you find this? So many people have advice. And so you kind of end up not knowing what to do or who to trust. And I think, although, you know, there's limitations to what I say too, if you were here for any other reason, let's say you were here for a depression group, you would want to know damn sure that what I said had some scientific merit. And I don't see there's any difference when I'm speaking to a room full of people who want to change career. Does that make sense? Good. So here's what I've learned in the last 10 years of working with people who are stuck. I think it's this. I think if we can understand why we get stuck, we have a far better chance of getting unstuck. And I think if I was to summarise, for those of you who are bored already and want to leave, I can summarise it in 2 minutes. Our minds evolved to do a different thing than what we ask them to do today. They did not evolve to solve career choice problems. They evolved, basically, to keep us alive, to warn us of danger, and that's it. They did not evolve to sort of work out complex ideas of how you should find meaning and fulfillment in your life. They're just not very good at doing that. Does anybody look at TED, the TED website? Fantastic. You may have seen this talk by Dan Gilbert. If you can't read that, he said, our brains evolved for a very different world from today, a world in which people lived in very small groups, rarely met anybody different from themselves, had short lives with few choices, and where the highest priority was to eat and mate today. Now, I don't think there's any aspect of that sentence which hasn't utterly changed. Well, apart, I do know a few people whose highest priority is still to meet, eat and mate today, but apart from that, would you agree? You know, which bit of that do you recognise? Sitting in the middle of London. And yet, really, that's what we're asking our minds to try and cope with, something completely different. So I'm going to offer you 4 reasons why I think we get stuck. And then after that, we have a break, There's going to be an exercise to try and combat each of those reasons. So although this bit is talky, after the break you're going to be working. Any questions before we plough on? Is this the talk that you signed up for? Yes? Okay. Reason number one. Too much choice overwhelms us. We think of choice as a good thing, and it is. But if you've ever read a book called The Paradox of Choice by Barry Schwartz, you will know that there are downsides to choice. There's something called the paradox of choice, which is that if our choices go beyond about six, we find it much harder to make a decision. And I would bet you are stuck, not because you have too few options, but because you have way too many. Yes? There are very few jobs that if you really applied yourself to, you couldn't do. And this explosion of choice is tough to deal with. We find it much harder to make a decision. But the paradox of choice, that one's quite well known. It has a nasty little edge to it, and that's this. The paradox of choice, what happens is, if we have lots of choices to make, and then we can finally make a decision, we're less happy with that decision than we would have been if we'd have only had one or two choices. Because what happens is this. We start to think about what might have been. Oh, I wonder if that would have been better. I mean, there's not a day, you know, I own two companies now, and I work for myself, and it's great. There's not a day that my mind doesn't say, oh, I wonder if you would have been good as a management consultant after all. You know, I was shit at it for 12 years. It just doesn't, so annoying. And so the paradox of choice just means that we become a lot more distracted. We're not present. And I think, actually, this is why mindfulness is becoming more of a thing. Because being mindless is not very good for us. It doesn't make us feel good. Reason number two. We tend to prioritise the short term over the long term. Which makes sense, right? You know, that's what your brain's there to do. You know, keep you alive. There's not going to be a long term unless you're alive today. So that's what it's there for. Has anybody ever seen the marshmallow experiment on Google? Has anybody recognized it? You have to. Who's going to talk us through the marshmallow experiment? Come on, somebody be brave. Yes, come on, our cameraman.
They put a child into an office, and they say if you wait a minute, 2 minutes, we'll come back and we'll give you another marshmallow. And then they leave them there with the one marshmallow, and if they're tempted, they'll eat it. And the study, I think, there was a correlation between scores in like SAT tests and stuff.
Yeah, that's right.
In future, whether or not they ate it or not.
Exactly, yeah, whether they could resist eating this marshmallow. And you see them, and it's so you've got 2 minutes, you've got to resist eating this marshmallow for 2 minutes, and then you get two marshmallows. And these kids just go, oh my God. And some of them are sort of licking the marshmallow and just sort of taking the bit off the marshmallow. And, you know, and if they can resist, it's a very good predictor of success later on. Anyway, we like to think, don't we, that that's funny. That's just kids doing their thing. But as adults, oh yes, we're much more rational decision makers than that, aren't we? Dan Ariely, a psychologist at MIT, ran an experiment with doctors, good old trusted, reliable doctors. And here's the setup. He said, okay, you are reading a patient's case notes on the day that they go in for an operation. And then when you're reading the case notes, you find that one important drug that could preclude the need for an operation has not been tried. So he gives them a choice. Do you pull the patient from the operation, which after all could be risky, and try the drug? Or do you just let the patient have an operation? What do you think the doctors said? Who would agree? Oh, you cynical people. Actually, no. A majority of the doctors said, no, we're going to pull them out and we're going to try this drug out because maybe the operation isn't needed. Phew, good old doctors, hey? Then Arily tried a second condition. It's exactly the same thing, but this time two drugs had not been tried. And this time, most doctors changed their minds. They just let the operation go ahead. Now, let's just rehearse what is going on there. Ludicrous. Because the short-term difficulty had just got marginally harder, they just thought, oh, fuck it. Just let them have the operation. Because not only will I have to pull them out, I'm also then going to have to decide which drug to give them first. And that's how we make decisions. Short term, what's easy? And of course, is it any surprise that then, you know, in career choices, well, I'm just going to do what's easy. You know, I've always been a management consultant, so I'm just going to be a management consultant. And it's just so much easier just to carry on being a rubbish management consultant. You recognize that? How about this one? This is another Arily experiment. There were three subscriptions to The Economist. You can get the online only, $59. You can get print only, $125. Or you can get online and print together, also for $125. Who's going for print only? Hands up. Couple for print only. Who's going for online only? Okay, and who's going for online and print? I think a majority. Okay. So, this is what happened. These are Economist readers, so you'd expect them to see, you know, be very good decision makers. Most of them went for online and print. Nobody went for the middle option, which I guess is understandable. Because you may as well, it's the same money, you may as well get online and print. Yeah? And a handful. So, this middle option looks seemingly useless, doesn't it? What's it doing there? So what he did is he took it away. So now, people were left with a choice between online only, online and print. What do you think people chose this time? They changed their minds! And so what's happening here is we don't make decisions based on our long-term, what matters to us, what we actually value. We make decisions based on comparisons. So when it comes to careers, we don't think, well, what would truly fulfill me? We just think, well, how am I doing in comparison to my mate who just graduated at the same time as me? You know, am I doing as well as he is? Is she doing better than me? Oh, maybe I need to carry on being a management consultant. And I think this is it, short-term thinking. Just that's another nail in the career paralysis coffin. Number three, our brains think in linear patterns. So brains are there to spot patterns, basically. Does anybody know what this is? It's what? It does look like a Yorkshire pudding. And what else is it?
Mother Teresa.
Thank you very much. It is Mother Teresa. This is the so-called nun on the bun, which was baked in an Italian bakery. And because of its resemblance to Mother Teresa, people come from miles around. It's now an international tourism symbol. Because people come to revere the nun, the bun that looks like the nun. Okay? Now, that's our brain looking at patterns. Quite funny, yes? In 1945, the psychologist Carl Duncker gave people these objects. And he said, what you've got to do is you've got to fix the candle to the wall using these objects. How do you do it? Very good, exactly. Most people got some pins, put the pins into the wall, tried to balance the candle on, didn't work. So then they got the matches, lit the matches, tried to sort of melt it onto the tacks, let it go, it didn't work. Nothing worked.
Can't just pin the top?
That works. What you've got to do is take the box that the tacks come in, use that, pin that to the wall, and put the candle in the box. But nobody did it. And the reason that nobody did it is because Duncker said, we become functionally fixed on the meaning of the box. The box is just the thing that the tacks come in. And we find it very hard then to think about any other purpose for the box than just the thing that the tacks come in. We become functionally fixed. Now, why the hell am I talking to you about this? Well, because psychologists have subsequently shown that functional fixedness applies to our own identities. So in other words, we become functionally fixed on the meaning of ourselves. So if I've been a management consultant, I find it very hard to think of a future where I'm not a management consultant. I am functionally fixed. And so therefore, trying to reinvent ourselves is incredibly difficult. Does that one resonate? Okay, this is the final one. Then we're going to have a break and do some stuff, okay? I think this is the most important one. And this is out of new research in clinical psychology. So experiential avoidance. This is a story of human motivation. We're motivated in two directions, to move towards things we want and away from things we don't want. Amazing, right? And this works incredibly well for everything happening outside the skin. So we move away from a bear, or what else? A bus, maybe, a moving bus, anything else? Move away from
burning
buildings, very important. And move towards a blueberry bush, maybe. A cupcake, fantastic, yes. An attractive stranger in the corner of a bar. Very good rule, right? It's the same for all animals as well. Away towards, good. Humans have got language uniquely that allows them to play the same rule to things happening inside the skin. In other words, to our own thoughts and emotions. So we can label things as good and bad. So what would you say a good emotion is? Let's say joy. Is that an away or a towards? Joy. Yeah. Fear? Anxiety? Uncertainty? Happiness? Yeah, we kind of know the language, don't we? Away and towards. Let's see how this plays out. I'd like you to think about something you're particularly proud of achieving. So an important goal or maybe an important value that you feel proud about. I've had people say running a marathon, doing an important project at work, maybe doing a talk like this. Everybody got something? Something that you are really proud of doing? Yes? What were the first thoughts and emotions that came up for you when you first started moving towards that important thing? What kind of thoughts and emotions came up? Fear. What else? Fear. Fear squared. What else?
Achievement.
In the early days, sir. A feeling of achievement in the very early days and moments of moving towards the... Okay. Fear of failure? Anything else?
Excitement.
Yes, sometimes excitement as well, yeah. Notice if we're just talking about descriptions of what happens in the body, how close excitement is to fear. For me, it's things generally... like fear, anxiety, uncertainty, there may well be some excitement, but it's the early days of marathon training. I think, how the hell am I going to run 26 miles? I take a call from Adele saying, do you want to do a talk in front of 100 people? I think, oh my God, what am I going to say? What if they hate me? All of that stuff. Yes? So, in other words, when we move towards important things, usually what the mind gives us is negative thoughts and emotions. Which way does the mind suggest going next?
Away.
Now, if you listen to the mind and then move away from the whatever this was, so you pull out of the marathon, or you tell Adele, I'm too busy to do the talk, so you pull out, what's the first emotion you're going to feel?
Relief.
That's exactly right. After that, things like guilt may kick in. But the first emotion will be relief. Now look at that. Look at your mind. This is how minds operate. You want to move towards important things in life. The first thing it does is beat you up. You move away, and the first thing it does is reward you. And this, although I'm applying it to sort of light-hearted way, actually this is not light-hearted. This is something called experiential avoidance. And experiential avoidance is at the heart of many forms of mental illness. In there is an absolute catastrophe waiting to happen. Because what happens is, if we spend our whole lives doing this, we end up avoiding these things, these really important things, in the service of not having these things. Our lives become about not having pain, anxiety, uncertainty, fear. And so what happens is, we spend, at extreme cases, our whole lives basically trying to avoid these things. That's what we become about. And this leads to much, much greater unhappiness. In fact, this is where depression lives. What happens is people narrow their lives in practice in the service of not having these things so that all they can face is their own beds eventually. Yeah?
Could it be a bit like agoraphobia?
Tell us about...
Where you're afraid of going out, so you just stayed at home.
100%. And it's the fear of going out that prevents you.
Yeah, but there's loads of stuff to do out there. And you just think, I can just go out, but I can't because I'm afraid.
That's right. And agoraphobics live their life in the service of not having the fear of agoraphobia. And it's the same with depression. Same with a lot of things, actually. Now, I'm not suggesting that that's, you know, going to happen. But, you know, I certainly lived 12 years doing experiential avoidance, and it didn't make me any happier. And I see a lot of people who are on the verge of, you know, pretty intense problems. So experiential avoidance is, I think, a real key problem. And the key is, what do you do to help people there? So, that's it. Here's my summary. This is why I think people get stuck. Firstly, because we have too much choice, especially in the information age. Secondly, because we prioritise the short term over the long term. We're not very good decision makers. Thirdly, because we tend to think in linear patterns. That's what your mind is there to do. And finally, because of experiential avoidance. Your mind is there to reward away moves.